In this episode of TWIP, it's all about talent.
This is TWIP.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of This Week in Photo. I am your host, Frederick Van Johnson. Today, we're going to be talking about nature versus nurture when it comes to talent and photography. In other words, if you don't know how to be a photographer, is it possible to become a good photographer by, you know, doing that whole 10,000 hours thing? Or are you just screwed because you weren't born with the innate talent of understanding composition, shutter speed, and all that stuff? So here to tackle that with me are two of my friends. The first one here is Mr. Troy Miller, who's always on TWIP with our critiques. Troy could not be on this show because he has an opinion on this, right? So
I only have an opinion on a few things. And this is one of them.
But you're on. I'm glad to have you here. Also on the show is Mr. Thomas Hawk.
Hey, Frederick.
What's going on, man? You and I have not talked in forever. What is going on?
Good to see you.
You get younger and younger every time I see you. It's not even fair.
So that's nice of you to say.
It's not fair. But you, there's a couple things I wanted to talk about with you, man. You are. You were kind of waving the flag for Flickr for the longest way back in the day and built up a giant audience and kind of holding their feet to the fire, you know, in terms of the things that they were doing and weren't doing, which kind of goes to your honesty and sort of pragmatism about the service. And now they got acquired by Smug Mug. Yeah. You have some thoughts on that, too. Yeah. Yeah. Obviously, you hate them now. So.
So,
he doesn't. He's got a Smug Mug t-shirt on, audio listeners. So, yeah, I want to get your thoughts on that. So that's the show today. It's going to be a really good show. There's lots of stuff to talk about. You guys, I hope you have your picks of the week ready because I'm going to put you on the hot seat for your picks of the week. I have mine ready. And we're going to go through listener questions. If you have a question and you're in the chat, go ahead and post that. Chris Berry will collate those questions out for us and put them in the Google Doc, and I'll read them out to you guys when we get to the Q&A segment. But before we do that, I want to thank our friends over at Capture One, made by Phase One. They are the sponsors of this week's episode of This Week in Photo. You can get to their software at twip.pro/Capture One. That's twip.pro/Capture One. They've been all the rage on the TWIP Pro network and in, you know, all things TWIP lately. It's all, you know, lots of people are talking about Capture One and Capture One versus Lightroom and which is better, which is a better workflow. Turns out Capture One is a really good workflow. And in fact, today I did an interview, one of those five interviews I did was with the CEO of Serif, which is the company that makes Affinity Photo. And he had some interesting things to say about Capture One in regards to Affinity Photo. So stay tuned for that. That'll be coming up in a couple of weeks here. We'll be pushing that thing live. So thank you guys for coming, thanks Capture One for sponsoring the show. It is always a pleasure to have those guys on. Then at the end of this episode, when we finish all of our chit chat and chatter and talking about talent and getting to the bottom of that, I'll be running an interview that I did with Erin Bobnick. She's an adventure and wilderness photographer who I like to say, and I said in the interview, is the personification of Indiana Jones if India had a camera. That's her right there. Seriously, she's amazing. She was an educator. You'll find out all about Erin. She's an inspiration in many ways and probably the most humble and talented person that you could ever meet, besides, you know, Troy Miller and Thomas Hawk. So this is gonna be good. So guys, let's dive in. Before we start, I want to just do some quick sort of housekeeping. Thomas, I want to start with you. You and I haven't talked in, like I said, in a long time. The last time I had you on TWIP, you were working on this lifelong project of accumulating a certain number of images. And I want to find out, you know, first of all, tell us what that number was and how close you are to it and what was the gist of that journey you put yourself on.
Yeah. So one of my own goals is I want to publish 1 million photos before I die, not just to take 1 million photos. I mean, I've already taken several million photos, but to process, finish, you know, and have them be completed works of art. And so I've got about a little over 150,000 up now on Flickr is where I keep them. And I got probably another 160,000 or so that are finished and processed and ready to go to be uploaded. So I upload like, you know, 50 a day or so to Flickr. And, you know, so I'm, you know, almost a third of the way there. And I've got, you know, I'm, my life's half over, a little over half over, I guess, because I'm 51. So,
hey, speak for yourself, man. Speak for yourself.
Hey, well, if I make it to, I'm going for 100. So, if I go to 100, I should be able to get 1 million photos in. I think I'll do it. So that's my goal. And predominantly shooting, America. So, you know, I'm shooting the 100 largest American cities and then the 200 largest, 300 largest American cities, rural America, festivals, portraits, people, nature, landscapes, just everything America, all 50 states, all. So, you know, I've got about probably maybe 60% of the states done at this point and 60% of the 100 largest American cities done. And I'm just little by little. On Friday, I'm flying to Nashville and then I'm driving to Knoxville and I'm shooting the Smoky Mountains and down to Atlanta and flying home. And so I just, you know, pick off a little piece here and there all the time. But it's going great. It's a everyday photo thing.
That is really cool. It is your life, the personification of a self project right there. Yeah. I mean, that's a lifelong project, not just a, you know, I'm going to do a photo every now and then. You're like, that's a lot of photos over a lifetime. You're building basically a Thomas Hawk like stock library over there.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. No, I want to shoot America more comprehensively than it's ever been photographed in history.
Good.
So that's kind of the goal over my life, and to, you know, capture a piece of that and archive it and put it on the web for the world to see as long as the web is around.
I love that. Yeah. And you know, in the next lifetime, you could do it again and sort of show the progression of everything.
Right.
Yeah. Well, cool. Well, thank you, man. Welcome. I'm excited to hear your opinions on this. I know you always have opinions on stuff, as is Troy Miller. So this is going to get good. I know. I have a feeling. Troy Miller, you're on the show. For the people who may not know who you are, you're also known as Spicy Jello, spicyjello.com. Yep. What's your elevator pitch? What's your cocktail party your spiel that you tell people when you meet them?
I like to tell people I'm a creative. I make my living as a wedding photographer, but I'm into all things creative, whatever that is. Like, I'm into pottery. I do steel fabrication. Photography is my core. I mean, that's where I'm at. So, but anything creative, I mean, the idea that Thomas is doing this big project, I mean, to me, that's the essence of being a creative. That's awesome.
Right. So, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, that is amazing. That is I did an interesting interview. Thomas, I think you know. Do you know Julianne Cost over at Adobe?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. I did an interview with her a couple weeks ago, and it was all about projects, personal projects, and the importance of personal projects, you know, and giving yourself a box or sort of boundaries time-wise to play in to kind of push your creativity forward. Really interesting stuff, you know. That's a smart person over there they got working at Adobe.
Oh, yeah, they do.
Yeah.
There, good people at Adobe.
Yeah. So folks in the chat, again, I want to remind you guys, if you want to get your questions into us, go ahead and put them in there. As Chris just mentioned in the chat, at mention This Week in Photo, it'll highlight your chat, your question to us, so you can find it easier, and we'll get to that in the Q&A segment. Also, if you're enjoying this episode and you dig it, give us a thumbs up in there so that the Google robots will know that we're worth streaming, and they'll keep us in their good graces, and maybe, you know, the algorithm will bubble us up to, you know, so one or two people can see our show. You know, so, you know, if you got to go over there and place some, like, you know, some offerings at Google in order for that to happen. But guys, let's start with this first topic I want to talk about, and that's talent. And that's the idea of, it's very simple. The premise is very simple of this question. Is talent learnable? You know, Troy Miller, I'm going to start with you. You're in the middle here. I'm going to start with you. So, sorry, Brady Bunch. Wait, you're over there. I don't want to lead the witness, but there's two schools of thought. There's the school of thought of either you're born with it or go do something else. Do what you're great at. And don't try to force yourself into doing stuff you're not great at. And then the other school of thought is, if you put 10,000 hours into anything, you can become great at it. It's all about mileage and repetition. And that's how you get to Carnegie Hall. Practice, practice, practice. Where do you fall on that? Is it nature versus nurture, or is it, you know, something else?
I, I, I tend to think that, you know, there's talent in all of us, but what that talent is specifically is different. You know, I couldn't learn the talent to be a musician. Like, I could be a musician, I could certainly learn that, but do I have the talent that it takes to rise above mediocrity or to be better than the next person who just goes and learns the steps? I'm a very visual person, and so for me, my creative elements are always visual, and I think my talents are visual, and that's where I could do painting, I can do sculpting and building, and photography is where that's at. And then that talent, I think, is enhanced by the skill of learning over time. I don't think that you just naturally are born with it. There are some people who have talent right out of the box. I mean, Mozart, you know, composing his first symphony at six. I mean, there's definitely some innate talent there, but not everybody can learn that.
Yeah.
So I think talent is specific to each person. Like, it's a gift, right? Like, every person has that little gift, and you just have to nurture it and figure it out over time. That 10,000 hour thing, I think that what that does is that helps to fortify where that talent is.
Yeah. You know, a lot of this conversation came from a chat I had with a Barian X Perillo yesterday. So I drew the analogy of the Venn diagram of, you know, three circles that intersect. One of the circles being talent, one of the circles being, you know, desire, let's call it. You know, you want to be a photographer. Maybe you suck, but you want to be a photographer, and you like everything that goes along with it, but you don't have that innate talent. And then the third one could be, I mean, it could be a lot of things, but the third one could be money and just sort of what can keep you going on this as a career and which one is the right one to do. Thomas, I want to throw the question at you. The same question I gave to Troy, nature versus nurture. Can people learn to be great or exceptional, or do they hit a ceiling based on, you know, whatever genetic factors that they're saddled with?
So I think yes. I think absolutely everybody can learn to be an artist. Everybody can learn to be a creative individual. In fact, and I think in all of us is the seed for that. And, you know, there's the whole left brain, right brain thing. And some people use, you know, one more than the other. But I think everybody has creative potential. And developing that is really up to the individual. And sometimes it does take a lot of practice. You know, the 10,000 hour things, or, you know, Cartier-Bresson said, you know, your first 10,000 photos are your worst.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but it can be developed. I sincerely believe it can be developed, and particularly with photography specifically. I think anybody can develop talent.
So, can you develop to great, though, right? I mean, you can develop. Is there a ceiling? Can you develop to competent, or can you develop to excellent and amazing?
I think it's amazing. I believe, because here's what I believe, though. My beliefs might be a little bit different off this, but I believe that the only person you need to be great for, or that judges you as a master, is yourself.
Yeah.
And yeah. So can you be great? Yes. But, you know, what is great? What is greatness? By whose standard, right?
Well, I mean, by George Washington on the dollar bill standard, right? Because you want to be great and then be compensated for that greatness if you're trying to make a business out of this. I mean, you could take that, I don't care what anybody else says, this is all about me perspective, if there's no money involved in it, right?
Well, right. But I believe creative pursuit, while it can involve money at sometimes, that at its core, it does not. And I think that if you're going to judge it by, well, how does society respond to it? How does money respond to it? How do fame and recognition respond to all of that? I mean, look at Vincent van Gogh, you know, I mean, the guy basically was never appreciated during his lifetime. You know, he committed suicide when he was 37. He did, you know, 2000 works of art. You know, he cut off his ear and gave it to a prostitute. I mean, he was just, you know, it never regarded. Now he's just the greatest, one of the greatest painters of all time. But during his lifetime, he was not considered in any way great, and he didn't make any money, and he didn't, you know. So, I mean, what is greatness? I mean, so for me, I think each individual has to look at their own work, and to them, that can be great. And maybe one person's work is They want to do great figure study, yes, and models, and that's what they focus on. And somebody else likes to photograph cars, or someone else is a landscape photographer, or everybody does their own thing. Or, you know, in my case, I want to take 10,000 photos of neon signs. But, you know, whether that's great or not, sometimes it will be recognized by others, and that can include commercial success, but many times not.
Yeah.
And I think that you should pursue it. And I still think that you are absolutely great to the extent that you appreciate your work, you take pride in your work, you develop your work, you improve your work. And it's great.
Yeah, no, I agree. You know, when Troy, I want to have you chime in on this as well. So Trevor Panaki in the chat room put a statement in there I want to highlight. He says, competence can be taught. I agree with that. Competence can be taught, but part of being a photographer, of course, genre notwithstanding, is confidence as well. So you could book learn and understand how to shoot, let's say, models or weddings, right? And the mechanics and the flow of 1,000 weddings and get it. But until a Troy Miller gets in there and takes command of that wedding, you know, is that taking the command of that wedding? Can that part be taught? Can the competence and the confidence be taught? Troy Miller, what do you think?
You know, I agree with everything Thomas is saying. And I think that in the sense of, you know, when we look at doing things for ourselves and being satisfied in our work, and that's what's really important first. We need to be satisfied in our work first. Then when we take it out there into the world is going to judge it and just break it down. It's going to put it in categories and enter competitions. And then, you know, do we get compensated or not? It takes a lot of work to get there. You know, you've got to put in your 10,000 hours, even more than that. I mean, I've been shooting weddings for going on 30 years now, and there are photographers that just don't see the day the same way I do, or see a sunset as it's happening in the same way that I do.
Yeah.
We could say, I think it's fair to say that that's talent, right? Like, that's one of those things that I just see light differently than the next person, and maybe that helps me sell weddings. But certainly, however we slice it, what really it comes down to is you have to work really hard at it. It's not, you can't just sit on your laurels and go, well, you know, I've taken a few photos in my time, so I'm pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
You got to work at it. And mm-hmm. then every day, and I'm sure Thomas can answer this too, but you know, your first 100,000 images, you're like, well, that was pretty good. And then you do your next 100,000 images and you look back and go like, what was I thinking? You know, like I could have done that sunset so much better if I would have just understood.
Yeah.
So there is talent and skill and learning and time that all comes together to sort of, in my opinion, make that creative moment.
Hawk, do you agree with that?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think that, and I put a tweet out the other day that I said, you know, the most important characteristic for a photographer is endurance. Mm-hmm. And I just think it takes time and time and time. And one of the problems for a lot of photographers is I think they give up too early, or they don't put in the work and they don't do the work. And I think it's just, you got to be out there with a camera, even when you don't feel like being out there with a camera or whatever you're doing, and just continue to go at it and go at it, and go at it. So yeah, I do agree. I think that you do develop talent over time. But a part of it is you can't just say, okay, I'm going to take 100 photos and I'm done.
Yeah. All right. Well, go ahead, Troy.
I was going to say, well, look at Ansel Adams, look at Moonrise over Hernandez, or look at his famous El Capitan shot. El Capitan. You know, he shot thousands and tens of thousands of plates of film before, like the Moonrise over Hernandez, before he saw that moment and knew that that was the shot he had to get. Yes, he was a talented man, and yes, he had a lot of skill. But it took years of practice for him to be able to create that image. That was by no means just this innate, hey, I'm good, I can make good images, right? He was prepared, his car was prepared, his camera was ready. You know, like, there's a lot that went into that.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's a, you know, we're looking at it, I think, in one dimension, you know, and that's the, you know, can you practice and get better? And I think the consensus is yes, you can get better, you can get great, like Thomas says. But here's a you know, a wrinkle in that. I'm going to throw in a bone into the Gearworks. We'll see how you guys deal with this one. Thomas, you go first on this one. So if you overlay the technology quotient onto getting good, is technology and how things are getting. I mean, it's hard to take a bad picture with today's cameras, right? Or sure. let me rephrase that. It's hard to take a badly exposed photo with today's cameras. You can take one of your foot that's perfectly exposed, right? It's not, make it a good photo. But it's hard. The cameras are doing a lot of the work for us. And if you fast forward into smartphone technology and computational photography with bokeh and, you know, post shot bokeh and all that stuff, it gets even more blurred, right? So is technology sort of short-circuiting the path to greatness, because no longer do people need to suffer and make 10 bazillion mistakes on shutter speed before they understand how shutter speed works? What do you think?
I believe that a vision is so much more than the technology and the tools that you use to complete the vision. And in looking at that as an artistic vision, and just, you know, to look at an example, for instance, you can take and say, you know, Ansel Adams makes these great photographs, right? They're everybody would agree they're classics. And mm-hmm. that was time and time and time of practice again. And maybe you can point an iPhone at El Capitan now and get an interesting looking photo that looks pretty well composed. But at the same time, it's what are you doing with your entire body of work as a photographer? So to me, photography these days is less and less about one image, making a nice photo of a flower. And it's more, what are you doing with your body of work? And I think that that's where the creativity comes in. It's not just, okay, I'm making one creative image. It's, I'm going in this direction. And it doesn't, oftentimes it's not even technology enhanced or based. I mean, I've seen a lot of people do very creative stuff with Polaroids and, mm-hmm. and, you know, you have people like, Nick Leonard running around taking pictures of neon signs with Polaroids that look outstanding in this sort of very lo-fi aesthetic yeah. that are not necessarily perfect photographs. And I actually like a lot of that stuff in some ways better. I don't think that the tools, I think everybody has a vision, and sometimes that vision is creating this epic masterpiece of a waterfall that you're using every tool in Lightroom and Photoshop to perfect, and other times it's just running around with a film camera and slinging it over your shoulder and snap, 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 and then seeing what comes up.
And there's something to be said about that as well. Troy Miller, what do you think about, you know, the gear, the technology sort of short-circuiting the path to greatness in terms of learning how to do photography?
I think it's doing two things, and I spend a lot of time with new photographers and photographers that are trying to grow and build their business and build their career and build their art. And the one thing that I've come across is, one, the technology really opens the floodgates for some people. It absolutely just opens up their creative ideas for them to be able to go do things. But what I see is that for a majority of people, technology is getting in their way. And what I mean by that is, it's not really the cameras, but it's the computer, and it's uploading and it's backing up the data and how to get it into Word. I mean, get it into Lightroom or get it into Capture One. And then what are your output preferences and what presets do you use? And you're spending so much time on that. I mean, I have friends and colleagues that literally struggle with the after the button pushing part. So it's a different challenge, and I see it as more of a majority. A lot of people have a lot of creative ideas, but I think they're having a hard time getting them out. Maybe they're distracted. Maybe the technology isn't really in the way. Maybe it's just distracting them, or they get caught up in too many of the things. So in one sense, I think it's really opened the door for some people. Being able to shoot infrared, just pull up a camera and shoot infrared is just amazing. That's technology I never had before.
Yeah.
So we have to be respectful or cautious of the technology and try not to get oversaturated in it and try to get it out of our way, because it's in the way a lot.
Yeah. I think that's a skill, learning how to not be seduced by the siren song of the next cool thing. Right. But at the same time, I mean, you don't want to be seduced by the siren song, but at the same time, you don't want to be a Luddite and blind to progress. Right.
So yeah, you don't want to be left behind either.
No.
So it's like Affinity Photo. You're like, man, this is really good. I got to go look at that. And you just spend an hour playing with it, and you could have been outside shooting some photo. You could have been creative.
Yeah, it's true. Well, then here's a different spin on this, Thomas Hawk. Mediocrity. right? Yeah. So, you know, you look online today, there's a lot of amazing photos, but then you could, if you look online enough, you start seeing patterns in the chaos and a lot of repeated shots, right? And you're the perfect person to ask this because you've shot so many photos in such a diverse range of photos. How do you avoid, or how do people that are out there as they're on their journey to gain talent, how do they avoid mediocrity and sliding into that, I'm going to just shoot what everyone else shot, or I'm shooting for the likes or the thumbs up? You know, how do you differentiate yourself and not be oatmeal?
Right. Yeah, I think you have to be thoughtful. And you have to be, you have to think about what is your artistic vision, what is your project, what are you really doing, what do you love doing, and you know, there's different types of photography. I mean, you go on Flickr sometimes, and somebody goes down, and the fireworks show is on, and they take, you know, 3,000 photos of the fireworks show, and they're badly composed, and they look terrible, and they just throw them all up on Flickr 3,000 in a row.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's not good. But I think that if you are a serious photographer and you're thoughtful about what you're doing, and you're a careful editor of your images, you know, I really don't believe in a mediocre photograph. And I don't believe, and part of that is, you know, back to who's to say what's great, you know, who's to say what's mediocre?
Yeah.
I mean, interestingly enough, back to our old friend Ansel Adams, you know, one of my personal inspirations is William Eggleston, who's really by many regarded as really the father of color fine art photography, and has been shown, you know, obviously at major museums all over the world. But you know, when he had his very first show at MoMA, Ansel Adams wrote sort of a scathing letter to John Sarkowski, you know, saying, how dare you put this man's work in the MoMA, in New York City, the great MoMA. And it was kind of their first big color show. And it wasn't just that William Eggleston was shooting color, and that was a big shock to the world that was so used to the aesthetic that Ansel Adams had created with black and white, but it was that he was shooting banality. You know, William Eggleston will just take a camera out and he'll shoot, you know, a car bumper or his freezer at his house and his refrigerator or a pair of shoes under a bed, you know, and these are, or a light bulb on the ceiling. And it's just, people are like, well, what in the world is that all about? You know, and why should that be a great photograph? But now the widely regarded is these are brilliant, great photographs. So what is a mediocre photograph and who do you listen to? And if the great Ansel Adams says this is mediocre photography, do you listen to him or do you not listen to him?
Right.
So I think it all comes down to individual. I don't think a mediocre photograph exists inside any one individual's mind. It's just at whatever state they are. Now I can look back, you know, at my photos that, you know, like Troy said, and say, okay, geez, those first 100,000, I can't believe I took that photo. That's so terrible. And that's, you know, to me personally, but, I believe, you know, if you take a photo and you care about it and you create it, it's a great photo.
Yeah. Yeah. And the whole thing is subjective, right? Art in general.
Absolutely.
It's 100% subjective. So who's to say the shot I did of my hangnail is not art? You know, it's art. And it may be art. It may be art.
It's definitely not.
It probably is.
See? Thank you. Thank you. All right. Here's another take on this. And this might be slightly controversial. As you know, you guys know I can be sometimes. But let's overlay age into this learning matrix, this 10,000 hours thing. You know, a lot of people say, you know, okay, you know, you're like, Thomas, you're 51, you know, I'm your age. You know, I think we're all generally in the same age. If, like, for people that are in our age range, is it too late to learn a new skill? Right. If someone picks up a camera today and they've never shot photos and they decide, you know what, I want to be the next Ansel Adams, and they're 55, 60 or whatever. Is it too late for them? Is it in photography or music, or can they go be a DJ? I'm talking about myself here.
Can they get a motorcycle?
Can they go get a motorcycle, or is that a midlife crisis? I don't know. What do you think, Thomas?
Absolutely. They can buy a guitar. You can start doing painting. And, you know, I mean, look, you know, you have George Bush doing paintings, right? You know, starting to decide his second life as a painter after being a president.
Yeah.
You know, I believe that anybody at any age is no constraint. Age is, you know, no constraint to be creative. Everybody is creative at every age, and you can develop that creativity. And especially in some ways, photography might even be a little bit easier because you have a little bit of a head start in that you're not developing some of the, I mean, I do think that there, that the road to being, say, a great a pianist and learning how to play piano might be a little bit harder than what the ramp up speed to start making interesting photographs.
Yeah. Well, this is because physical, right? Getting, like, hitting those keys at lightning speed is more difficult, right?
Right. It is. It is. So I do think I would encourage anybody at any age to take up photography and to use the left side of your brain and to be creative and to do something. And I don't care if you're 9 or 90, I think it's at any age, everybody should pick up a camera or somehow express yourself creatively. It doesn't have to be a camera. I mean, you could buy a guitar when you're 70. I mean, all you need to do is learn 3 chords and you can play something in the key of G. So,
I agree with you. But, you know, I know Troy Miller, on the other hand, thinks, you know, life past, say, 30, the ship has sailed, right?
That is not true.
So what do you think, Troy, on the age thing? Is age a barrier to picking up new skills, you know, specifically photography?
No, not specifically photography. I mean, there are certainly some skills that age is going to play a part in. I mean, you know, you want to go out and be a race car driver and compete with the 25s, like, you're not going to be able to do that. I mean, reaction skills and things like that.
Right.
But in the sense of what we're talking about, photography art, no, there's no barrier. Age is never a barrier. There's literally no barriers to being a creative or being an artist. There's just none. Whether it's disabilities or it's challenges of any kind, financial or otherwise, there is always, always an opportunity to be creative and go create art.
I love that. Yeah. So don't use it as an excuse, people out there. You know, hey, in my younger days, I would have done this, but now that I'm 30, I can't do it right now. I don't want to hear it. All right, let's bring this topic home. The last part of this is there's, you know, when you talk to people about how to learn different things in photography, a lot of people will say, fake it till you make it. Right. You want to be a wedding photographer, model Troy Miller. You want to be a travel photographer, model Thomas Hawk, and do what he did, buy his gear, you know, buy the same shoes and t-shirts he wears. And until you can sort of define what your style looks like. Thomas Hawk, what do you think? Is that a viable path to fake it till you make it? Or should people start at the outset trying to figure out who they are and what their own personal style is?
I think that develops over time, a personal style. I mean, and you may initially be attracted to a certain style of photography. You may say, oh, look at this HDR stuff that Trey Ratcliffe is doing. That's really interesting, and strive to do that. And then you may find a year goes by and you're a street photographer and you're doing, you know, modeling after Gary Winogrand and shooting out on the street and doing stuff like that. And so, I mean, I think you can certainly be inspired by people. And you can, to a certain degree, say, you know, oh, I think that subject matter is interesting. Obviously, there are certain genres, whether it's landscape photography or you know, nature photography or portraits or whatever. But I think everybody, ultimately, if you do it long enough, you'll develop your own style and you'll develop your own interest and direction. And I'm more of a generalist. I shoot everything, you know. But there are some people that gravitate towards one specific avenue, and I think that's fine too. And I think everybody finds their own way, and you find your own path. Sometimes I think you want to step back a little bit and say, am I letting these other photography influence me too much?
Uh-oh. Thomas froze for a second.
Creative goals.
There you go. Thomas, you're freezing a little bit. Uh-oh, we'll see if we can get Thomas back. Troy, you still there?
I'm here.
All right, good. We'll see if we can't get Thomas back. He's frozen with a pleasing expression on his face there.
That's always good.
Yeah, we'll see if we can get him back. So while we're trying to get him back, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, the whole fake it till you make it idea, is that a viable course of action to getting good at photography?
Sometimes. I would say that if you're a landscape photographer or you're going to do macro or something like that, yeah, you can kind of do that. If you're going to be a wedding photographer, I'm going to suggest no, because if you don't really have the skills to pull the day off, how can you fake it, right?
Yeah.
So you have to work through the challenges, whatever those challenges are, and you have to throw yourself out there. One of the things that happens with people early on in their photography is that they don't spend enough time with their cameras. They don't know their cameras really well, understand the exposure triangles really well. But because they look at the back of their cameras and go, oh, look, I took a really cool sunset shot, they think they've made it. Mm-hmm. The difference between skill and luck is that you can get that image over and over and over and over. And somebody may look at that and go, wow, you're really talented. Well, no, that was my 10,000 hours I practiced.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's a good point, though. I mean, that's a huge point right there. Just the idea of it depends. Faking it till you make it depends on what you're doing and who you're doing it for. For example, I can fake it till I make it learning how to, you know, take on a different genre of photography with self projects like HDR or something, right? Or astrophotography, whatever. But I shouldn't be doing that if there's a client on the other end that's waiting on my stuff, right? I shouldn't be learning on their dime. I don't want my, you know, my general practitioner at the hospital faking it till he makes it, right?
Yeah. So. I mean, you know, let's face it. I mean, we've all had to do that. You know, we've all been in a scenario where we're like, I'm not sure I can pull this off. And we just go all in and we do what we can to make it work. And then the next one, we gain some more skill from that. So, yeah, you could say that that's kind of faking it. But in reality, it's you weren't as confident with yourself as maybe you should have been.
Yeah.
But practice, you know, that old adage, practice makes perfect. I mean, you have to put in the time for anything. You just lots of time.
I know. Yeah. I'm still practicing this whole podcasting YouTube thing. One day I'll get the hang of this thing.
Yeah.
Still trying to get, speaking of that, still trying to get Thomas back. I'll try to call him back and see if he can't dial, get him reconnected. But let's end that segment, the whole talent versus or talent, nature versus nurture thing. And I want to move on to the picks of the week. So the picks of the week is a segment on This Week in Photo where our guests get to share something that to the This Week in Photo audience that is somehow related to photography. It could be anything. It could be a course. It could be a technique. It could be a mindset. It could be a lens or whatever. Troy Miller, I'm going to let you go first because the hawk is missing in action. What's your pick of the week, man?
I've got two. So I'm going to cheat a little bit. I've got two. I just upgraded my webcam to the Panasonic or the Lumix G7, and I got to tell you, I'm so impressed with that camera. All the settings and all the features that are in that little thing, it just really impressed me for what it was. I mean, my assumption of what, you know, a $500 camera could do really was blown out of the water. So that was very cool. But when it comes to software, I've been looking at Photo Mechanic by CameraBits. It's upgraded to the next version, and I wasn't really super excited about it, but it's so fast, and I've been using it for about 10 years now. If you want the fastest browser and for image calling and stuff, Photo Mechanic is definitely my pick. So
yeah, good picks. Hey, I got an update. While you were talking, I got an update from Thomas Hawk. He says Comcast went down at his house.
Oh no. Oh my God.
Did I not tell you, Troy Miller, about the gremlins that show up whenever I do these shows? They swarm. These gremlins swarm whenever we do an episode of TWIP. You just got to get through them. You got to power through. Nice. Yeah. Nice. So we may have lost Thomas Hawk for the rest of the show, but he did share a lot of valuable tips, and I got to get that guy on for a one-on-one interview as well. And, but we'll make that happen. My pick of the week is, and which I mentioned earlier, is Affinity Photo. So I want to give you guys a glimpse. I didn't know this. I have Affinity Photo on my iPad. I have it on my MacBook. And I hadn't really dove into it. I've been trying to force myself to learn it, but I keep finding myself bouncing back to Photoshop because I know it and I've been using it for, you know, since the beginning of time, right? So, So I was speaking with the CEO, the guy in charge of Affinity Photo. So I had him on the hot seat and I asked him a bunch of questions. That interview will run in a couple of weeks, but I asked him, one of the questions I asked him was, you know, why would people consider Affinity Photo over Photoshop when there is that muscle memory built in? And he answered that, you know, with aplomb. But the main thing that I took away from that interview was I didn't know that all of the Affinity applications. They have three right now, I believe. They have Affinity Photo, Affinity Designer, and Affinity Publisher. And mm-hmm. all three have the same file format. And so you can just open files between them with reckless abandon. Even on the mobile devices, it's the same file format, so you can pop around. The other thing was the way that they approach smart objects in Affinity products is, you know, kind of in Photoshop, you have, you know, it's kind of a deliberate act to make a smart object and then embed that or place that in your document so that it's resolution independent. You can make changes and it won't degrade. They built that in. So you don't even know that it's doing that. So it's right. Like smart object and editing in place is part of the app. You know, like in Photoshop, when you run a Gaussian blur, you know, it brings up the dialog box and you drag and you see what your Gaussian blur is going to be. Then you say, okay, then it does it. In Affinity, you're doing it in situ in your document. So you say, I want to blur this thing. You blur it. It blurs right in its right in place versus you having to go to another document. So or another window. So that's my pick of the week. Affinity Photo. During that interview, I pressed and pressed and pressed to try to get them to offer us a discount for TWIP, but they wouldn't do it. So he said it's already too inexpensive. So yeah, I would suggest go check it out. It's really, really cool. Really cool app. So that's our picks of the week. I feel like I want to do a pick of the week for Hawk. I'm going to do a pick of the week for Thomas Hawk. He had on his Smug Mug shirt, so his pick of the week is Smug Mug. Go check out Smug Mug. That's Thomas Hawk's pick of the week. You ready to do the listener questions? You want to dive into those?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. We got a couple of them in here. Thanks to Christopher Berry. The first one is from Steve Van Sickle. Steve says, do you think the tech internet does more to scare away potential creatives? For example, is it too daunting to see so many amazing artists that seem to have already perfected their craft? That's a really good question. Is it too late, Trey Miller, to, you know, or is the wall of amazingness that is Instagram and all these other services where you just see these flawless images, does that scare people away from the party thinking, hey, I can never be like that?
You know, I think that seeing that does scare people away, because what they're doing is like I put in the chat, like you're looking at your daily shoots, your daily shots, and you go to Instagram and you're looking at like somebody's best and you're like, oh, no, I'm not any good. You know, I mean, I shoot a million. I've got a million files in my catalog, but I post one at a time and they're good. Right. The other 300 from the wedding are mediocre. So what I would say is, yeah, don't look. Just don't look. Shut yourself off from all that media. Don't go look, and just focus on your own work.
Yeah.
You know, and just build it and show it to the people around you. Show it to the natives that are in your life, you know, to people in your tribe.
But it's hard to say that. I mean, it's easy to say that. But then on the other hand, we're contradicting ourselves because we're like, shadow someone that you like, you know, fake it till you make it. And then on the other hand, we say, you know, go your own way.
You know? But you got to get to a point where you can walk and run before you can run a marathon or before you can start timing yourself. Right. Mm-hmm. So photography is like that. Like you have to learn the camera, be able to do your basic exposures, learn composition, and then show those to the people around you before you go out in the world and compete. Because really that's what we're doing in social media, is we're competing. Mm-hmm. We're putting our images on. We're looking for likes. We're trying to, you know, compare to somebody else. I'm trying to get you to look at my fire images. You know, it's a competition. It's like going to a job interview every time. Yeah. You got to work your way up to that. You know, you can't just throw yourself in completely, you know, new. You're just going to get shredded, and then it just ruins your motivation.
Yeah. Nope. I agree. Very good. Very good. All right. Next question up is from Chris Berry. Chris says, has there been a time when you knew you've overworked a skill and forgotten to incorporate the talent that led you to improve your art, be it photography, talent, or another art discipline that you've transmuted into your discipline? How do you get back to that later at a point of mastery if you still find value in it? That's a deep question, Chris. Chris Berry. Chris Berry, what is going on over there in Arizona? Is that a... No, that's a... Okay, let me see if I can interpret that. Okay, has there been a time when you knew you've overworked a skill and forgotten to incorporate the talent that led you to improve your art? So overworked a skill, maybe done something too much? Like, I don't know. How do you overwork a skill? I mean, if we're saying that it takes repetition, do it more, 10,000 hours, how do you get to Carnegie Hall to make that skill and become the best of the best, I don't think there's a such thing as overworking a skill. What do you think?
I think that it becomes mundane sometimes. You know, if you do the same shots, you do the same poses, you do the same lighting over and over and over, you're not rediscovering it. So maybe that's it. Maybe it just becomes mundane and you don't appreciate it anymore. So you don't build on it. Mm-hmm. It seems like oftentimes when I learn something new, I go out and I build on it. I'm excited about it. If I shoot at the same location all the time, I tend to find myself going to the same corner where I know the light's good. Mm-hmm. If I'm at a facility I've never shot before, I'm like scouting everywhere like crazy. So I have to constantly force myself.
What do you do to make sure that you're at the top of your game when you go to a wedding? Because it's like I can count the number of weddings I've shot in my lifetime on one hand, you know, maybe two hands. And you've shot hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, right? Just by shooting those few, I realized that I didn't really want to be a wedding photographer. And I have immense respect for people that do shoot weddings now. But I wonder, at the beginning of the wedding, like the night before, when you're driving to the location, is there a ritual that you have to go through to make sure that you are hyped up? I mean, is it caffeine? Is it no dose? Is it like, do you run around and do jumping jacks? How do you get yourself hyped up so that you could be that photographer?
I eat. I just make sure they got a full belly before I start the day. And then I'm not.
Oh, see, that would put me to sleep.
No, literally. I mean, I've been doing it a long time and I've had burnout and I have gotten bored with myself and I have gotten to a point where I'm not happy with what I'm creating, even though I'm creating something, you know, really good. I just don't like it anymore. Mm-hmm. And it's a conscious effort to put through. And, you know, some people are entrepreneurs. Some people are self-starters. They like to get up in the morning, go to work. Other people like to have a cubicle and, you know, have a job, a list of things to do. When I get to a wedding or a shoot, I consciously say, you know what? I know that spot over there under the tree is good. I'm going to go walk over in the parking lot and just see what's going on. Yeah. You know, I constantly have to mentally break my habits.
Yeah, and it's interesting. Sorry to interrupt you, but I'm looking at the chat here, and it's really interesting what people in the chat are saying, because they're like, yeah, like Chris is saying, you get to the point where you're a robot. WorkPick says, I think it's a question of getting bored and becoming burnt out, you know, and I agree that. Trevor says he's burned out on Instagram. So how do you avoid that, right? Again, you know, I always go back to the, you know, thinking of like the kid that's trying to learn violin. You got to do the scales over and over and over. You got to keep doing it. Then at some point, you hit that tipping point where you click and now you're a virtuoso, right? How do you get past that, you know, the Pet Cemetery thicket to get to the other side where you're actually amazing and you're a virtuoso? I don't know.
It's awareness.
Yeah.
I really do. I really think it's awareness. I mean, look, Frederick, we'll take you, for example. You know, you reinvent yourself all the time, mm-hmm. right? Not because you have to, but because you want to, because you're constantly like, ooh, well, I can do this and this works really good. So I'm going to try this now. Like, oh, we got this whole recording thing down. Let's do it live. What could go wrong?
Exactly.
You know?
I don't know if that's smart or just ignorance.
I think it is smart. I think that's what breaks the mediocrity that we tend to find ourselves in. I believe that mediocrity is the foundation for greatness. And if you find yourself constantly doing the same thing over and over and over, we'll call that mediocrity. If I'm always doing portraits and I'm always grabbing a 70 to 200 to shoot portraits, well, that's going to become mediocre over time, right? Mm-hmm. So now let's grab the 105 macro. Let's shoot with an 85-1.4. Let's use a fisheye. Let's figure out how to make that work.
Yeah.
And then when I go back to the 70 to 200, it's not mediocre anymore. It's just part of the variety. It's part of the menu now.
Yeah. And that's what gets people excited about this stuff is the variety, right? I mean, depending on your genre, like in like Tim Ingalls in the chat, he'll tell you that part of his love of photography is the gear lust, of course, and the nerd quotient of, you know, just the technology piece of it. And then there's the psychology piece in model photography, the building the rapport with the other human so that you can collaborate and make a great image, right? And then it just goes on and on. And all these different facets come together to keep us excited and to keep it fresh. Let's take a couple more questions here, and then we'll close the show and roll the interview with Aaron Babnick. I know you guys want to hear that. Let's see, next one. Ruth Happel made a comment. She says, maybe you can overwork a skill with the pressure of social media to keep posting a similar style or genre for being rewarded. You lose the element of being experimental. Yeah, that's that, you know, the Scooby Snack syndrome. You know, you want the Scooby Snack of the likes and the thumbs ups and all that stuff. So you change your direction to get more of that sort of digital endorphin rush. So yeah, it's definitely a good comment. Ruth also says, is it better to specialize and become an expert on one type of photography or let synergy propel your favorite genre by dabbling in other photo types? That's a good question.
I like the idea of being well versed and going deep in a single subject, because then I think when I move peripherally, it helps me understand the relationship to that initial subject. So if I'm really, really good at weddings and I go out and I shoot landscapes and all my landscapes look like I have people in them because I'm shooting shallow depth of field and I'm focusing one third of the way into the scene, and now I've got a way to compare and now I know what I'm doing wrong.
Yeah.
As opposed to just kind of learning everything and then hoping you fall on something, you know, really focus on one thing and learn it really well. And then I think those skills will translate.
Yep. I agree. Very cool. All right. Next, this is a comment for you, Troy. It says, this is from WorkPix. Which lens did you choose for the web for that G7 over there? What lens are we looking at you through?
It's the 14-42, and I'm pretty sure I'm right at 14. It's the pretty much the widest.
Nice. So. How do you like the lens? How do you like the glass on that Micro Four Thirds camera?
You know, I haven't taken any photos with it.
Yeah.
But I actually recommended this camera to a friend of mine who has a daughter who wants to get into photography, and I said, you know, this is like the perfect intro camera. It's super lightweight. It's very functional. Does a lot of amazing things. It's a really And I'm amazed at some of the features that are in this camera. I got to tell you, it's a little embarrassing that I got, you know, multi-$1,000 cameras that didn't do some of the little goodies this thing does. So
yeah. Well, I'm not going to get into that debate with you right now.
Hey, but it's understanding, right? Like you understand how it works, and that helps you just get the gear that works.
Absolutely. Okay, a couple more here, and then we'll move on to the interview. Carlos Rivera says, has anyone used On1 Photo RAW, and how does it compare to Affinity? Have you used On1 Photo RAW?
Yeah, I have. It's more of a comparison to like Lightroom and, you know,
digital asset management type apps, right?
Yeah. It's nice. It's really nice. So there's a lot out there. I mean, because there's also Alien Skin, which is really nice. You know, there's Luminar. So it's in that family.
Yeah. So many choices out there, and that was one of the questions I threw at the Affinity guy this morning. Was, you know, why enter such a crowded field? This is like a party where you're trying to find a date, and there's like, you know, a gazillion other people there that are competing for a finite number of people that want their attention. Like, how do you deal with that? So yeah, he had a great answer to that as well. The short of his answer was, you got to be better than everybody else, essentially. So, which is good answer.
Yep.
Or at least attempt it. Trevor says, do you think you have to work harder when you're talented to push yourself harder to discover your own limits, to go beyond what's easy for you? Yeah. I'll hit that as well. I think so. You know, like when not to say that I'm talented, but I think when you have an aptitude for something, you can push yourself to a certain level, whereas other people that don't necessarily have an aptitude have to work twice as hard to get to that level, which makes you, when they work twice as hard and they're at your level and you're sitting there eating a bag of chips, you want to push really, really hard to like, okay, come catch me now, right? Absolutely.
I think it's just all about understanding your limits, knowing where your limits are. I mean, it, not to sound conceited in any way, but I'm good at shooting weddings. Like I can shoot weddings. They don't scare me. They're easy. I see the day all the way through beginning to end. The thing that I have to be really careful of is not being complacent, not being someone who goes and go, I'll just go do that shot. And okay. Yeah. Another silhouette, like no big deal. Like, man, if I do that, I'm dead in 3 years. Yeah. You know, somebody else is going to come up and, you know, just eat my lunch. So I've got to constantly be aware when I look at my work, like, okay, you know, like I that's a good creative shot. At least I tried.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, you've got to constantly push. Yep.
Yep. Keep pushing. Yeah. Don't rest on your laurels. All right. We're going to transition out of this segment of the show, Troy Miller, and go into the recorded segment I did with Aaron Babnick. Any parting shots you want to leave for the audience on either, you know, talent and nature versus nurture, or, you know, any of the other things that we talked about tonight?
I think there was a lot of great advice from Thomas and from the whole group of us here tonight. I think basically just go out and create, go out and work, shoot, share, ignore social media a little bit, you know, don't take that stuff seriously. Really don't. Because I can tell you that what is popular in social media isn't what I sell and isn't what makes my living. So there is a difference there. But get around a good group of people, find a tribe of people that you're comfortable with and spend time with them.
Love it. All right, folks, that's the end of This Week in Photo. Troy Miller didn't mention it, but you can connect with him at spicyjello.com. That's where all of his work, or a lot of his work, is. And you can harass him over there. But we're gonna end this episode of This Week in Photo and go on to the segment with the interview with Aaron Babnick. If you are listening to this episode audio, this will end right now. And if you want to listen to the Aaron Babnick interview, that should be in your feed also separately. So making it easy for everyone, you can get it however you want it. All right, that's it. Thanks a lot, Troy Miller. I appreciate your time tonight, man.
Yeah, love it. Thank you, guys.
All right,
happy to be here.
All right.
This is Twip.